in recognizing the nature of yourself. One of the definitions is sat, that which is sat, satchit-anandam. You are sat. One understanding of sat, definition of sat, or being, you are pure being, you are existence itself, or you exist. You are being, you are existence. Another way of saying it is you are that which exists in past, present, and future. You exist in all three periods of time, past, present, and future. Another way, you cannot be negated in past, present, or future. All of my experiences take place in time and are negated by time. All experiences come and go. All of my perceptions change. All of my thoughts change. All of my feelings change. They don't qualify for the term sat, because all of these experiences change. They are subject to time. In this definition of sat, I am that which does not change in past, present, or future. So as this moment comes and goes, I remain. As the next moment comes and goes, I remain. As a thought comes and goes, I am. A perception comes and goes, I am. The thought comes let me say the thought manifests. And the thought manifests and the amness of my being. Supports that manifestation. My being is its being. I am, think of the flower. I am, the flower manifests. I am the being of the flower. Think of a tree. The tree is a manifestation of knowledge. I am. The tree enjoys my being. Think of the meadow, that manifestation of knowledge. I am, and it's my amness that is the meadow's isness. There is no isness other than amness. The amness of my being, I am, is the only being that there is. So I could say, I am, the meadow am. I is, the meadow is. My being is the being of the meadow. Myself, the self, is the self of the meadow. I am consciousness, chit, sat, chit. I am consciousness. My consciousness is the knownness of the meadow. Consciousness itself is known. My being is known. It is self-evident. Consciousness. It is self-shining, self-evident, consciousness. It is known, self-evident, it is known. In the manifestation of knowledge, the meadow, the knownness, the consciousness. Pervades the meadow. And so we say the meadow is known. The knownness of my being is superimposed on the meadow. So the meadow becomes known. The existence of my being, my amness, is superimposed on the meadow. And so the meadow exists. The consciousness of my being, the chit, is superimposed on the meadow. So the meadow is known. Water is superimposed on the wave. The clay is superimposed on the pot. Water is the Sat, the truth of the wave. Not separate from the wave. Clay is the truth of the pot. I am the truth of the meadow. The wave comes and goes in the water. The pot comes and goes in the clay. All things that exist, all experiences, all experiences that exist in time come and go in me. Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata
Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini.
Okay, we'll chant verse 16 and 17.
Nasato vidyate bhavah. Nasato vidyate bhavah. Na bhavo vidyate satah. Na bhavo vidyate satah. Ubayorapi drishtuntah. Ubhayorapi drishtuntaha Tvanayas tattvadarshibhi Tvanayas tattvadarshibhi Avinashitutadviddhi Yena sarvamidam tatam Vinashamavyayasyasya Nakaschit kartu marhati. Nakaschit kartu marhati.
Go to Sunday again for both verses.
Na asataha vidyate bhavaha. Na abhavaha vidyate sataha. Ubayoho api drishtaha. Antaha tu anayoho tattva darshibhi avinashi tu tadviddhi tat viddhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasya asya Na kaschit kartum arhati.
This verse 16 is an important verse. It's a key verse for the whole Vishnavedanta, actually. We worked on this last week. So you'll see 17 and 18 expand on that understanding. So I just want to kind of include this verse 16 so we bring it back to your attention and then move on to 17. So. Na asataha vidyate bhavaha. And the meditation today was around this verse. Na asataha vidyate bhavaha. For that which is asat, asat meaning mitya here. For that which is not sat, sat means that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. That which always is, period, which means that which is non-objectifiable, that which is free from time, that is sat. So that which is not that, doesn't fit that definition, then for something that doesn't fit that definition, that which we mean by asat, it is not that, right? For that, whatever it is, it has no being, right? Na vidyate bhava, that has no existence. If it doesn't fit that definition of being existing in all three periods of time, not subject to non-existence, then it doesn't really exist at all. Na bhavaha, it has no being at all. Right? Then it says, na abhavaha vidyate sata sataha. And for that which is sat, for that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future, that which really has been, for that there is no abhavaha. There is no non-being. There's no non-existence for that. That can't go out of being, right? But something which can go out of being never had any being in the first place. So this particular, I'm going to just kind of review the logic to help you to understand the truth of it. Because this is really, to understand this is to understand that I am the whole. To understand the whole truth of this universe is right here in this in this little sentence here. So that's why it's so critical. If we say that something is asat or mitya, then we're saying it has no independent existence. Because this is the problem. If something comes into being, right, it comes into being, from what does it come? From where does it come? If you say something is coming into existence, right? You understand me? Something, we say something is coming into existence. What was its prior condition? If you say that. If you say something's coming into existence, what was its prior condition? Non-existence. Does non-existence exist? Oh, Edie's got one there for you. Okay. This is the thing. If something comes into existence, really, in truth, right? Its prior condition is non-existence, right? Non-existence, and I mean in the true sense of the word, like tuchum, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, nothing can come from it because it's not there. This is just, I mean in the most simple, simple, direct way. So now, what that means is that anything that changes, its prior condition was not there. Right? Because it has changed. If something changes, that thing is now being born. Right? If we say change, it's the same as saying birth and death. Because any change is the death of the prior condition and the birth of the new one. So even when we talk change, often we just say birth and death. Because the change of the prior condition is the birth of the new one. But if you say that something has come into being, then you're saying that its prior condition was non-existent. And that is not possible. Right? Because nothing can come from nothing. Right? And so then we have a problem. The problem is this. Is that we experience all of these things coming into being and going out of being. A whole world of experience is this. The thing can we experience change all of the time. In fact, every thought in the mind is a change. Every thought in the body, every movement of the body, every perception, that's coming into being and going out of being. But if it was really coming into being of its own accord, wholly, solely, that would not be possible. Because that means that the whole of that thing had prior non-existence. And so, what we have to look at is, what then is the reality of this that we experience, right? What gives it its being? Because the being that it has can't come into being, because if it came into being, it wouldn't exist before it came into being. And if it didn't exist, it wouldn't be able to come into being. So what is it in our experience here that is? And if it is, it can't come into being. That's the paradoxical initially. If it actually is, it can't come into being. Because if it came into being, it would be coming from non-existence, and that's not possible. So what we have to do then, if that's understood, is to be able to tease out from our experience that which is and that which depends upon that which is. Right? It has to be that way. That's why this clay pot or wave ocean, the clay pot especially, Shankara uses it over and over and over again, because it shows the nature of reality. It shows the nature of satyam and mitya, right? The satyam is the clay. The clay, in reference to the pot, the clay never comes into being in reference to the pot. The pot comes into being, right?
And say once the pot comes into being, it wasn't there at all before, which is our experience in the world. This object wasn't there, this situation wasn't there, this perception wasn't there. It wasn't there, but the clay was there, right? So here, the pot wasn't there. Say I have a lump of clay. There's no pot there. There's clay there. There's no pot there. I make the pot. Now the pot has come into being. It has. It has not a prior condition, right? If I squash the pot and make it into a plate, the pot has now gone out of being. So the form of the pot is, it has non-being, non-existence on either side of it, right? It's just a fact. And all of our experience has non-being on either side of it. Every single moment of experience, every object in the world, every perception, every emotion, every feeling, everything that changes has non-being on either side of it. And it has being the whole while. But that's what's interesting. The pot, and that's the secret. That's the big secret. The pot has being the whole time before it comes into being, while it's there, and when it's destroyed. Right? The truth of the pot never changes at all. The truth is the clay. Right? So that being that the pot, what makes the pot, the being of the pot, belongs to the clay. See what I mean? The being of the pot is the being of the clay. What is the being of you? What is the being of your body, which changes? What is the being of your sense organs, which change? What is the being of your mind, which changes? What is the being of your perceptions, which changes? What is the being of all of these objects which change? Because they can't have any being of their own. So the being that they enjoy has to be a being which is independent of them. The being which the pot enjoys is independent of the pot. It belongs to the clay. The being which any name and form enjoys in this creation, like the pot, has to be independent of the nama-rupa, of the name and form. Because the name and form is bordered by non-existence. Right? It wasn't there before and it's not there after. When this body dies, it's gone. It just becomes, dust, ashes to ashes, or dust, whatever that is. It goes back into the elements, right? So the nama-rupas, all of the names and forms, come into being and go out of being on a subtle level. Subtle level means your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your imaginations. They're all coming into being, going out of being. And that's why, and because the mind enjoys so obviously consciousness, we can use it for teaching, to make you see the truth of this so clearly, because in the mind, I can easily say, the whole mind is in your awareness, right? I can have you manifest a meadow, right? And resolve the meadow. And you can see for sure that that meadow is mitya, or that that meadow has no inherent reality apart from yourself. That in fact you are the consciousness which the meadow enjoys. You are the existence which the meadow enjoys. You're the being which the meadow enjoys. We can show this, it can be so vivid, but it becomes more difficult for you to realize that this same holds same for what's external, the objects external to the perception of the physical body. Because the dehatma buddhi, the identification with the physical body, is so strong. But the logic is exactly the same, because everything that we experience in the external world, forget about the vritti, the thought modification in your mind, which is so powerful to use. Let's just look at extend the reality to what you're looking at here in the room, all of these objects that we're experiencing. They have the same problem. They all come into being and go out of being. They're all bordered by non-existence. That means that the being that they're enjoying, the being that they're enjoying, and we give the whole thing being, everything is, but you're giving this being to something which comes into being and goes out of being. That means that, and that's not possible. That means that you're super, you must be superimposing the being experience, the isness of all of these objects. You have to be superimposing that isness onto them. Because none of them, the isness that they're enjoying, can't belong to them. Because every single one of them is bordered by non-existence. Every single thing that you experience is subject to change. And even if you go inside of any given object, you can infinitely divide all of these objects, really. You can remember so many times I've used this lamp as a conglomerate. It's a name for a conglomerate of many things. So that's another whole logic. You can't even find a thing here to say it has been. That's another problem. That's also true. You can't find anything here because everything is infinitely divisible. This lamp is not a lamp. It's a pole and a little plastic knob, and it has a little plastic thingy up there and some light bulb and some stand and black paint. And it goes on and on and on until you're down to molecules and quarks. So even to find an object is impossible in this world. To give it being too. Say, so yes, there is something. All of these things, they're changing, but of course they exist. Then the next question, well, show me something. Show me something. You can't find anything. But leave that logic alone for the time. We're talking about this nature of mitya, what it means for something to be mitya or something to be asat. Asat means it has no being of its own. That's what that means. Sat means it exists in all three periods of time. It can't be negated in past, present, or future. That is what we call real. Why do we say that is real? That is what exists. That is what exists. We say that because there is no possibility of anything else existing. How is it going to? Where is it going to come from? Non-existence? If it doesn't come from non-existence, it already is. You see? If something doesn't come from non-existence, it already is. If it already is, right? If it already is, then where is it going to go? If it already is, it means it has no beginning. That's a very profound statement. Just think of this. If something is and it has no beginning, then as it is, it always is. Because if it had changed, it wouldn't be anymore. Say if something is, it really is, and it has no beginning. In other words, it has to have no beginning because otherwise it would come from non-existence. But if it is, and it has always been, that means it's changeless. Do you see that? There's nothing in the creation that fits that definition. It is, and it is changeless. It's not subject to any type of negation. No object in the creation fits that, but that is the self of the creation. That isness, which is only my amness. There's only one place to go in order to recognize sat. And that is only to be it. I am the sat. I am that Sat because this amness is the only thing that is not objectifiable to be subject to change. I am not objectifiable to be subject to change. If I'm objectifiable, I exist within time and space and I'm bound by change. And so what is going on here is that in all of my experience, the amness which I am is the constant, which is the isness of all of the creation. What we don't realize because of this dehatma buddhi, this identification with the body, is that this amness is the experience of isness. Think of this. There is no word is. There is only the is. The word is an illusion. There's only the word am. Or let me put it this way. There is no experience is. There's only the experience am. Because your amness is self-evident as I am, I exist. That's your self-evident experience that you take totally for granted. Now try to have an experience of isness. It's not possible. So just take your amness and fill the room with it. Your amness is the clay of the pot. The being that you are, the conscious being that you are, is the clay of the pot. It is the being, the changeless Sat, which all of this mitya, all of this creation of change, enjoys. But it is the material. It is the, I would say, it is the changeless material, because not objectifiable. But it is the changeless being in which everything takes place. So here, in this verse 16, the Lord Krishna says, for what is asat, what is not fulfilled, this definition of sat, there is no being. He's saying, for this creation, this is what it amounts to, this entire creation of name and form, none of it has any being at all. It's impossible for it itself to have being because it's bound by change. That means it's got non-being on either side. That's not possible. But for what is real, what is sat, non-being is impossible. And so he says, then those who know the truth, right? He says, the ones who have understood this, drishtaha anta, for whom this is clear, right? Those people see the truth. They're tetvadarshi bihis. The truth is seen by these people. Because in this statement, everything is here. That everything is here. So now, let's look at it. Here you are in this room, right? Which you're perceiving through your sense organs. Right? You're perceiving through your sense organs, this room. And on a subtle level, there can be other things going on, thoughts and imaginations and feelings. And so in the mind, there'll be things going on. And through your sense organs, there's a perception of this room. Right? So this is the maya. That's maya. That all this part is maya. Everything that you're perceiving through your sense organs, the physical body which is perceived, your sense organs themselves which are perceived, the thoughts in the mind which are perceived, all of this that exists within duality, this is what we call, this is maya, right? All of it is bound by change, okay? So that's just our experience. I'm just giving, I'm verbalizing our experience. Everybody should be able to say, yes, that's right. It's not any trick. You just say, yes, that's right. Okay, thank you. Okay, that's right. Now, another thing that is true about this is that all of it exists. It is. That's also experience, isn't it? All of it exists. There's not, no, it's not like only I exist. I experience, I exist. My thought exists. My emotions exist. My body exists, my sense organs exist, my perceptions exist, you know, and also these objects that I perceive, the perception exists, and all of the objects that I perceive exist. There is nothing in this room that is not existing. Existing, the isness of it, is the common denominator, right? There's nothing here that is, there is no distance at all between isness. And it's so much is that we don't think about it. We just take it for granted. It's like, well, what are you talking about? Right? Of course it is, right? And of course it is, just like this wave is water, and this wave is water, and this wave is water, and the whole ocean is water. Duh. Of course it is. If this exists, and this exists, and this exists, and this is all, of course it is. Right? Another thing. Not only does all of it exist, all of it is known. Right? This is known, and 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 this is known. Right? The wall is known, and the space is known, and my body is known, my sense organs are known, my mind is known, my thoughts are known, and I am known. There is nothing that's not known. The knownness is pervasive from my being out. I can say I, consciousness, the conscious being, I am known. And I can say, the painting is known. I am known, the painting is known. Right? My mind is known, my thought is known. I, who am here, I am known. Right? There's nothing. There is nothing that's not known. But the problem is that, and that's the truth. The knownness, the beingness, is in fact the water. This is the water, right, of the ocean. This is the water, the amness, the knownness. And that amness and knownness, I am. Well, the wave, it's true, the wave says, I am the water. The jnani wave. Wave that has self-knowledge, it says, I am the water. And it will also say, and you are water, and you are water, to all the other waves, and you are water, and you are water. And in fact, the whole ocean is water. The Lord is water. Ishwara, the Ishwara ocean is water. You're all water. There's nothing else here but water. And I'm water. And so now I say, I am. And I am, and you are, and you are, and you are, and it is, and it is, it is, it is, this, and you ever said, yes. And it's all known. It is known, it is known, it is known, and I'm known, and I'm known, and we're all known. Yes. We totally, totally, totally take it for granted. But there's a problem, because even though this is our experience, and we'll all go, yes, what's the difference between a jnani wave and an ajnani wave is if the wave is an ajnani, doesn't know, when it says, yes, I am the water, it says, I, the wave form, am the water. And when I, the wave form, die, I, the water, will die. When I, the wave form, will die, who am water. I, the wave form, am the water. And I am approaching the shore. And I, the water, am going to die. Right? And so I say, I am the conscious being. And I am going to die. And I am different from you. And I am different from you. Right? That's the ajnanam. Just think that's such a subtle difference, because there is not a difference in the experience, in a sense. Because look, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. I might as well say, this is ajnani, you say, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. An ajnani will say, I am, you are, it is. The jnani just says, I am. The Ajnani thinks there are three different experiences of am, are, and is. There are not three different experiences. There's the only experience of is. It is, it is, it is, it is. It am. There's only one experience of known. It is known. Okay? Known. The knownness is consciousness. And then we have rug known. Right? The rug gets superimposed on known. The table gets superimposed on known. The painting gets superimposed on known. My body gets superimposed on known. Really, the knownness is the self-evident nature of myself. And when there is a vritti manifest, a manifestation of knowledge, then the knownness of consciousness is superimposed on that manifestation of knowledge. And so from the ignorant standpoint of identification with this body, you know, this object over there is known, and that is known, and that is known, where honestly, there is only one known, and every manifestation enjoys it. Whether it's the manifestation of Ishvara, the manifestation of the entire universe, as Bhagavan, as Ishvara, it is known. And every part is known. The manifestation of the whole, if you look at the infinite manifestation of Bhagavan, of Ishvara, the whole Maya, the Maya Upadhi, it is known. And everything in the Maya Upadhi is known. So this is known. My mind is known. The objects are all known. So now think of it like this. I could see a little confusion on your face. Thing like this.
No.
This is a good place to bring in the dream. I'll use a dream as a lucid dream, as an imagination. If you have an imagination, a dream, lucid dream, the whole dream is known. Right? The whole thing is known. Because it's your dream. Now, within the dream, from you as Ishvara, the Ishvara of the dream, the whole dream is known. Okay, for everybody? If I ask you to have a thought, the whole thought is known. So you are the Ishvara of the thought. Now you're the Ishvara of the dream. That means the whole dream is known. It is known, it is known, it is known. It is, 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 it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Okay, for everybody? Now, for the objects in the dream, the rock is known, it doesn't know. The table is known, but it doesn't know. But those things in the dream that have a sukshma sharira, a subtle body, they not only are known, they know. Look at our experience here. This room is a dream, and we're all in it. And say so each for each one of us, it's our dream. Okay. In this dream, the whole of the room is known and everybody in it. And you're identified with yourself in the dream. You have the self-identification. And the whole dream is known and you happen to be identified with yourself. Okay. Now, in this dream, there are other creatures, living beings. They are all known also to you. Right? They're all known. But they are also knowing. Because they have subtle bodies. But there are also things in this dream that don't know. They're known from the drishti of Ishvara. Like the wall or like the table. This table is known from the standpoint of the whole, from Ishvara. And it's known by all the jivas. Right? Because we're all now pointing out this table to you. And all the jivas in the room, all of us in the room, are saying, oh yes, there's a table here. We are all knowing this table through our sense organs. Through your eyes, right? You're seeing this table through your eyes. Okay? But now say this is your dream. And here is this table which doesn't know itself. It's just known because there's no subtle body there. Okay? Now all of the human beings go out of the room, including you. So now you're still dreaming. There's nobody in the room. Be looking at the table. Okay? There's no jiva here looking at the table now. It's just the empty room. The empty room, which is known. Which is known by who? Ishwara. You, the dreamer. Because there's nobody in the room looking at the table. So the table is just known because it's a manifestation of knowledge. There is nothing, nothing that is away from known. Everything is, and everything is known, because isness and knownness is the water. That is what is here. And who is the water? I am, because there's nobody else. Who is the I? Not the body, mind, sense, organs. That's part of Maya, right? That's part of the dream. That's part of Ishwara. That's part of the manifestation. But what is the self of the manifestation? What is the being? What is the truth of the manifestation? What is the truth of the mitya, of the asat? Is that which is not born? That which does not come into being? That which cannot be objectified? That which cannot be objectified, because objectified is an object, I mean. Because if objectified is an object, then it's within the creation and bound by change. It's known. It's infinitely divisible. It changes. It has no being. But nothing has no being. Nothing has no being. Everything has being. But the being is not dependent upon it. It is dependent on the being. That is the relationship between Satyam and Maya, Satyam and Mithya. The pot is totally, the Mithya, the pot, is totally dependent on the clay. The clay is not in the least dependent on the pot. The clay is. The pot depends on the clay. I am. Amness is. Being is. Right? Being, consciousness, set, chit, is. Which is me. It doesn't come into being. It doesn't go out of being. It is the being. Which everything comes into and out of. And it's not that everything that comes into and out of has any being of its own. Because if it comes into being, where's it coming into being from? Non-existence? Can't. So the only being that things that come into being and go out of being have is being itself, because it can't have any being of its own, because otherwise it would come from non-existence and it can't do that. That's why we have this incredible situation here where I have to say, I am the whole, because there isn't any other being. And I have to be, I am the whole of this, I am the whole of this, I am the whole of this. Because even this body, mind, sense organs, has no being. Separate from that changeless being. Do you see that? And that changeless being that I am, it can't belong to this body. It can't be limited to this body. It's like saying the clay is limited to the pot. It cannot be limited to it, or it's an object. If it's limited to this, it's an object, subject to change, because this is changing. You know? So that's not possible. I can't objectify myself like that. So there's one me, you know? There's one me, which all of these things enjoy, which is exactly how I experience it once I recognize it. This is the experience, that this is me. This is the experience, because to not have that experience, you have to say that this self that I am is this. You have to superimpose yourself on this, when in fact, yourself is equally superimposed on all things. It's not just superimposed on this. If you can say, I am this, and recognize that this is an existent being, then you have to also be able to say, and I am this, and I am this, and I am this, and I am this, because there is nothing in your experience that doesn't enjoy being equally. There's nothing in your experience that doesn't equally enjoy being. And so it's fine to say, I am this body, but if you say that, you have to also say, I'm the rug, and I'm the space, and I'm the wall, and I'm the universe, and I'm all that is. That's what it boils down to. Or else you say, I'm free from all of it. and all of it is only me. Any way you say it, you have to be the whole. Otherwise, you're taking yourself to be something that has and can't have any inherent existence of its own. So the thing is, we started out with just looking at this being in this room. We ended with being this in this room also. This is the important part of it. Notice that we have not gone to the next verse. This is the important part of this here. There is nothing other than what is here right now for you to be searching for. Right? This is it. Like when you, to be able to say, I am the whole, the self that you are is the self that is here. See what I mean? There's not somewhere else. There's not something else. So it's just that you, the recognition, because our identification is so much with the different experiences that we have. You know, one experience, being related to another experience. We're so caught up in Maya that we don't recognize, you know, that I'm the very being, I am the being, which all of this enjoys. The dehat na buddhi, the identification with body and everything is so much that we don't recognize our experience properly. And so that's why we have to teach about it in so many different ways. It's not an easy thing to have lifetimes of being the body and all of your experiences looking through your sense organs and your mind and interrelating as a jiva, as a limited creature within the creation, to recognize, oh gee, this is all me. This is only me. You know, the mind is going to say, I beg your pardon. You know, it's going to say, the mind will say, well, what about me? What do you mean? What about me? You know? That's because the mind and the body are you. It's like the wave saying, when it finds out that it's only supposed to be water, then the wave says, well, what about me? As though it is something else. So the mind, your mind identified with the mind and body, you'll say, yeah, but what about me? You know, what about me? Because it thinks that it's something else. And it isn't something else. It is that. Right? And once it realizes, oh, you mean I am that. Right? That's what it has, that's the big thing. It has to realize, oh, you mean I am that. Yes. You are that. Oh, you mean I am not going to die? Yes, you are not going to die. Because the self, the only thing that you are, is free from time. The only thing that you are is free from time. It's like telling the wave, the only thing that you are, yourself, is water. That's who you are. See what I mean? It's not like the mind or the body or the emotions or the moods or anything have any other self. So the self that they take, that the mind takes itself to be, is the self. The mind that takes itself to be the body, the mind, the sense organs, the jiva, it takes itself to be me. It takes itself to be itself. That self, which it takes itself to be, is the self. It just has gotten confused, thinking that the self that it is subject to the birth and death that it goes through. Rather, the self that it is changeless. The self that you are is changeless. And whatever the body, mind, sense organs, universe goes through, the self remains as the constant being. You see what that is? That's the Satyam Mithya. So when the Satyam Mithya is really understood, what you see is there's only me. Because like, just like you can say the water, in the ocean, there's only the water there. Here, in terms of the whole universe, you can say there's only me, because the very being, it is of all experience. It's only am. Known. The knownness is only consciousness. When we say self-evident, this is another thing that gets confused. What is the experience of self-evident consciousness? What do we mean by that when I say, I am self-evident? What it means is that my being, by its nature, is known. Not because somebody else is knowing it, not because there's a mind there, not because another means of knowledge is in operation, but because that is the very swarupa, that is the very nature of consciousness. It is known. That's what we mean by swaprakashatvam, self-luminous, right? Swata siddha, self-evident, self-effulgent, self-luminous. That's why when you sit in meditation and you withdraw all your sense organs and relax your body and just be, that just being, that's the self-evident knownness. It is that self-evident knownness that is superimposed on the world. It is known. It's that self-evident knownness that is superimposed on for Ishvara, the whole Maya Upadhi, Ishvara's whole Maya, the whole Maya Upadhi. It is known. Why? Because the self-evident knownness, which is consciousness, is enjoyed by all manifest knowledge. The Maya Upadhi, the manifestation of the Maya Upadhi, all of it is known. It's not somebody's knowing it. It's known because it's a manifestation of knownness. Right? So there is no other experience there. So that, when we understand that, if you're looking here in this room, everything is known, right? But the knownness that everything enjoys is the swarupa of your own being. Right? And so, say you practice that. You practice that recognition. Right? It's cognitive. It's a cognitive understanding. Like, if you look right now just at your own experience of being, and you have this am is, and get rid of it. Just recognize there is no is. There is no is experience. So say, do you see that? There is no is experience, because then you'd have to divide am is. Somehow there'd have to be some way. But there is no such thing. So say if you recognize that your own amness, and you just keep that word, you know, or change that am word to is, just keep that word, you know, and see if anything's away from that. So you have to kind of work with that and practice it, because the Dehatma Buddhi is so much. That's why we do Nitta Dhyasana. And guided meditations, all of it, like this guided meditation today, is just continually to kind of slow the mind down to make you kind of appreciate, you know, the changelessness of your own being and the impossibility of anything being separate from that. Okay. So we may get to verse 17 next week. We'll stop there, though.
Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Each class gets better.
We're really into Advaita now.
The explanation of Sat is, you know, really logical, you know, really amazing. But where I get lost, I think, is the chit part. The I can intuit that there is no endness without consciousness.
Yeah.
That everything is known, but I don't think I really see the logic of consciousness independent of this body mind.
Okay. What it is, first of all, where it's going to end up is that existence and consciousness are one and the same thing. Okay. So they're not qualities of each other. Existence is consciousness, and consciousness is existence. And this is how you get to that. This is where the drik drisha, the seer seen differentiation, takes place, because normally consciousness is identified with the physical body, sense organs, mind complex. It's as though this is what makes me conscious. But in fact, these things that I consider to make me conscious are actually objects of my consciousness. So, for instance, this body is conscious, but it's only conscious through sense perception. In other words, if I didn't have eyes, I couldn't see you, but I couldn't see my body. But also, if I didn't have same with ears, I couldn't hear. Same with taste, but with a sense of touch. If I didn't have a sense of touch, not only could I not feel this, I couldn't feel the body. So if you were to remove your sense organs, say, you know, lose your sense organs, you would have no contact with this body, nor would you have any contact with the world. So this body is actually an object of sense perception. That's how you know it. So it itself is not conscious. You could also have physical eyes and ears, but they could be damaged, right? And so then you would have sense organs, but you couldn't use them because they'd be damaged. So now the problem is that your consciousness is attributed to the body, when actually the body can be objectified, right? And also a dead body doesn't have consciousness, right? So we have to move the conscious being in one. We move it to the sense organs because they're responsible for the knowledge of the body and the world. But then we analyze the sense organs, and they also are not the locus of consciousness. Because you're also conscious of them. And you can also be without them. Right? Even they could be just there to be used, but you need not be using them. You might be daydreaming. They're there to be used, but you're not using them. And your mind is also aware of whether or not they're working properly, whether your eyesight is still 20/20, etc., if you can hear well. So your mind is aware of the sense organs, and it uses the sense organs, or it's independent of them by through its daydreaming or thinking. Okay. So the locus of consciousness moves in still a notch. Then the consciousness, the mind, we say, is the locus of consciousness. But then we realize, well, the mind itself is an object. It itself is known. And it is always changing, coming and going. It's mitya. It's illumined, right? And I can also quiet my mind. Right? And in deep sleep, the mind is not manifest. Right? And so the mind itself, because it is known and changing and objectifiable, it is not a locus of consciousness. Then we even move more inward and say, what about just the I thought, I am? Could that be the locus? Say, no. Because the I thought is also known. You don't walk around saying, I am, I am, I am, I am. No. It's also known. All of your moods, all of your emotions, even space is objectifiable. And so consciousness itself, now this is where it gets confusing. You think, yeah, but I am a knower. No. Your sense organs are, your eyes are a seer, your ears hear. These are instruments of knowing. Right? You need them. To hear, you need your ears. To see, you need your eyes. To think, you need your mind. For emotions and thoughts, both, you need your mind. It's an instrument. Consciousness is not thinking. Consciousness is not knowing an object. It is self-evident as consciousness. Right? And consciousness is what is superimposed on the mind, which then may be formed doing functions of knowing, etc. But the consciousness belongs to the self. The mind and sense organs are not other than consciousness, just like the pot is not away from the clay. But the mind itself doesn't change or hurt consciousness in any way. It's not dependent on consciousness, remains the same. Right? So your problem comes with identifying with the mind and the sense organs for in terms of knowership. Consciousness is not a knower. And it can't, so consciousness itself can't be objectified. Existence can't be objectified. There's nothing behind it. And so what actually is existence is consciousness. Neither one are objectifiable. Right? So there's nothing to separate the two. There's not existence over here and consciousness over here. So consciousness is existence. You see?
Kind of.
Kind of?
Yeah, I think that, saying that it's consciousness is not the knower was like a leap. And, I mean,
that is a leap, yeah.
And that's, so I have to contemplate that.
When you do, I'll tell you some good ways to contemplate it. But first of all, I just kind of took you through a seer scene, objectifying all of these things. Mm-hmm. When you recognize the mind itself is objectified, okay, mm-hmm. It's known. Qualities like knowership, thinking, feeling, all of these things belong to the mind. And all of those things are known. Now, if they're known, they're objectifiable. You can, you know, mentally get rid of them as objects. Now you're left with just your being. What is it doing? What function is it performing? It's not performing a mental function. It's not performing a function of the sense organs. It just simply is. It is just the very presence. Now, when you do meditation, like for instance, I think japa can be very powerful for this. Do you know japa? What's so powerful is after you've done the meditation, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, what happens is there's a progression where initially you're just using that in order to break associative thinking. And then you slow down, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. Then you have, the next progression is mantra silence, mantra silence. The next progression is silence in which the mantra comes and goes. So you recognize very clearly that the silence is not being upset or displaced by the mantra. Are you clear on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now when you get to that point, have your mind just ask yourself, okay, the silent one is me. That's the conscious being that I am. That's the one who's there, right? And in whom the mantra is occurring. Then you just ask, let your mind ask yourself for the mind to notice, am I this conscious silent being knowing anything, doing anything? Am I a knower? Am I a knower? Am I performing a function of knowing? Or am I just being? Am I just being me? Without any type of activity. I am just conscious being, but I'm not doing anything. You just ask yourself, you'll see what I mean. You know? It doesn't mean that everything isn't lit up because of me or I'm not the self of everything. It's just I'm not doing anything.
even right now, I'm not doing anything at all. I just simply am. I don't do the slightest thing. Never can, never will. And it's fine. Yeah. Just try it and see.
Said that that experience is knownness, though.
Yes.
That the self-effulgence of the self.
I like to use that word, though. So for some people it doesn't work. But I
it's
say...
It's problematic because I'm having trouble with that, too, tonight. Because
tonight when I was using it?
Yeah, because it is known as it is known. It is known implies knowing of something, which...
Well, what I'm... Yeah.
It am.
But the thing is... Yeah, maybe I have to stop using it, but it works so well for me that I keep using. But let me run through it. I understand the problem. But if in using this particular word we can break through that problem, it's very powerful. You know, because the problem goes right to the heart of the superimposition. The strength, how strong the superimposition is. So let me kind of explain. Right now, this room, the room is known. Can I say that? You're looking at the room through your sense organs. So especially the eyes, let's say through the eyes, you're having a thought modification of the room. And everything in the room is known. Clear? Is that clear, Penny?
Yeah. Could you say cognized? Is that the same thing?
Cognized to me, if I use the word cognized, it means I'm having a cognition of the room, which means I'm having a thought modification of the room. So I don't want, that's what cognized would mean to me. So then if I were to say that, all right, everyone, we're all having a thought modification of the room. Okay, for so far? Because through your sense organs, you're having a thought modification of the room in your mind. Now I'm going to say something else. That thought modification is known. Right? It's known. You're aware of it. Okay? So can I say, is it all right if I say, if I can say two ways? I can say, you are aware of it. That's one way of saying it. Another way of saying it is known. Can you accept that? Okay, now there's a subtle difference in saying those two things. If I say it is known, I am putting emphasis on the fact that the thought modification is known, and I am putting no emphasis on knowership. Whether if I say I am aware of the thought modification, if I use that language, then it's as though there's someone besides the thought modification that is knowing it. So the emphasis now is put on me as a knower of the thought modification. Do you see the difference? Like if I say, just listen to the language, if I say, I am aware of the thought modification. In that language, I am doing an act of being aware of the thought modification. Okay?
Separation.
Yeah. I'm doing something. I am being aware of the thought modification. Just as this language. I am aware of the thought modification. Another way of saying that would be like, I am the knower of the thought modification. Which would resolve into I, the awareness, being the knower. Do you see that in terms of language? Do you see it? Now look at, if I say like this. Notice that the thought modification is known. That's true, right? It is known. But we started in the drisha that this world is known through my sense organs. The body is known. It is known through my sense organs, the world and the body. The sense organs are known through the mind. The mind is known, right? Who knows the mind? If I get rid of, so you recognize, yes, the mind is known. So I get rid of the mind because it's objectified. And then who is left? Me.
Then the question is, am I, because the mind is known, am I a knower? If I am a knower, through what instrument am I knowing? Because as an individual, the instruments are the mind and the sense organs. And the body's not really an instrument, but I'll just throw that in for the heck of it. So we've got the mind and the sense organs are my instruments for knowership. So now, when we realize, well, the sense organs are known, and the mind is known, and I am left. So initially, we will say, I am the Sakshi. Right? Consciousness, the me, is the Sakshi of the mind. Then we get rid of the mind, and this Sakshi doesn't have anything to be a Sakshi of. Consciousness, that your being, which is consciousness, you call it a Sakshi from the standpoint of the mind, but when you get rid of the mind and the sense organs and the world, the Sakshi is not a Sakshi of anything. It's not doing anything, it's just awareness that itself is known because it's self-evident. And it's this knownness that the awareness enjoys, right? That remains when I get rid of the mind and the sense organs, but now the awareness is known because that's its nature. Okay? And this known awareness, because self-evident, so the awareness is known just because it's awareness. Now this awareness illumines the mind, bring the mind back. Awareness isn't a knower, it's not knowing the mind. It even, because the awareness is known, the mind is known. The knownness of the awareness, right, is what the mind enjoys for the mind to call itself known. The knownness now, which the mind enjoys, which is the nature of awareness, is what, when the mind illumines the sense organs, allows the sense organs to be known, that allows the world to be known.
But in a way, you know, I totally accept that, and you know, it just isn't my experience. And yet, to say, what if you get rid of the mind, this is problematic for me somehow, because I just don't see how you can. I mean, the only time I could say you get rid of the mind would say maybe deep sleep. Okay. But even then, you don't really get rid of it.
Okay, I'm not using the language correctly then. That's not, it's kind of, what do you call, metaphorical or something. What I mean is, by get rid of, is that if I can objectify something, like say I can objectify you, you're an object to me, subject-object. That means I can get rid of you in terms of being intrinsic to me. Right, so, and you could all walk out of the room, and I would still be here because I've objectified you. I recognize there's a subject-object differentiation, so my being's not dependent on you at all. I can just get rid of you. Right? Well, if that's true for all of you that are objectifiable, there's no subject-object. There's nothing, you know, we're not tied to each other. Well, in the same way, I'm not tied to this body. It's as objectifiable. And the same way, I'm not tied to the sense organs. They're as objectifiable. Same way, I'm not tied to the mind. So when I say I can get rid of the mind, what I'm saying is that when you recognize this objectifiable subject-object, recognize yourself separate from the mind. Just, it's a recognition of yourself. Get rid of the mind. Just, and I don't mean that like you're supposed to actually get rid of the mind. I mean recognize yourself as yourself, separate from that which is objectifiable.
But then again, it's my understanding that at least in the beginning of these teachings, a lot of times we would talk about how the ignorance was in the mind, and the mind that had the ignorance, and the mind that had the knowledge.
Yeah.
But somehow I still do have this sort of lingering doubt about that, or around that.
What is the doubt, though?
Oh, you know, that I exist without the mind. I mean, I know that I illumine the self, myself, awareness, consciousness illumines the mind changes, the thoughts change. But if the mind is necessary in order to gain knowledge, then there's some kind of, I don't know, there's some kind of, seems to me, some kind of dependence there.
No, because look at it like this. Let's go back to the a dream again, and you're a dream character in a dream, and you gain knowledge. Who is it that has to gain knowledge? It's the dream character with the dream mind, all of which is Maya, right? And so the one that is gaining knowledge, you know, is the one that will disappear when the unit, when the dream wakes up, right? So the truth of you, the self, doesn't need to gain knowledge. Ishwara doesn't need knowledge. The one that needs knowledge is the mind that's suffering from beginningless ignorance. It's not an ignorance that you've picked up along the way. It's an ignorance which you can do nothing about in terms of you're not responsible for that ignorance, because you are a product of that ignorance. By the very fact that you're a jiva, means one, a part of the universe, that being part of the universe determines the ignorance. In other words, that you can't be without that ignorance. Because the body, mind, sense organs are all partial. They're not the whole, they're part of the whole. And so...
I was just going to ask this, because I remember this coming up several years ago when this overwhelming need for the mind to be in control, like to feel like it's the center of it all.
Yeah.
So when you struggle with this, how can this knowledge be there without the mind? It's actually that kind of perverse nature of the mind, this abhavanesha, or this will to live, this willpower that is really at
root
of that. Yeah. And
until it really understands
that it's not harmed by this.
That it's not harmed, that
yeah.
the very, that its very self
is it
recognizes
right.
is limitless. See, the mind has to recognize that my very self is limitless, and that my very self is changeless, and the me that I've taken myself to be is Brahman,
mm-hmm.
not some other Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
The very me that I am is Brahman. Right. And so the mind has to say, oh my gosh, you know, I am Brahman. And then it recognizes itself as a tool, an instrument, that its changes, its coming and going, its failings, its glories, whatever it is, those things are not a comment on me. I am the truth of all of those things, and I am its truth. Yeah. And whenever the mind just says, I am me, it's referring to me, right?
And the problem also with that mind complex, as soon as you start thinking from that perspective, you're in the Maya, you're in the duality.
What thinking from?
Of this, when you start struggling with how can this be without the mind, you're in the Maya of the mind.
Yeah. And remember that the one who's thinking is illumined. In other words,
right.
The one who's thinking and going through all of these gyrations, it's all taking place.
But to get back to the is known word,
yeah.
That's actually sort of what he said, kind of hit on that, because the is known without the mind. That's to me kind of that's where.
Well, that's because that's why I still think that this is known unfoldment is important. Because when you say, how can something be known, the self be known without the mind? That is because you're taking the experience of being known to belong to the mind instead of to belong to the self. The experience of being known is the self-evident, the swaprakashatvam, the self-evident nature of the self. And that experience of knownness is what is superimposed on the mind. So you say the mind is known, as though the mind is enjoying this experience of being known. The experience of being known is what belongs to the self. That's consciousness. And then the self, but with the mind, the Maya, with the mind, then this mind enjoys being known. Right? If you take the mind away, then all that is there is being known. Put the mind there, Now the mind is being known. Take the mind away, now there's just pure being known, self-evidentness. Put the mind back, the mind is known. Take the universe away, being known is there. But take the universe, put the universe back, the universe is known for Ishwara. Okay? So have Ishwara in resolved, you know, in nirvikalpa, in avyakta, in unmanifest condition. What is there is known. The whole universe comes back. What is there is known. The universe is known. Right? Where does the is knownness come from? It comes to that's the nature of the Atma. And so here in this room is known. Where is the experience? There's all of these objects here. Where does the experience of is known come from? Is that experience being generated by the mind? Or is it being generated by the objects? Or is it being generated by the sense organs? No. If you take away all the entire universe, what is left is the is-known experience. That is the swaprakashatvam, the self-evident nature of that is consciousness. Right? So Swamiji will often say, this is a manifestation of knowledge. You could say, this is a manifestation of knowledge. You could say that knowledge is this is a manifestation of consciousness, you know. This is a manifestation of knowledge. It's a manifestation of is knownness.
To why Vedanta is not Descartesian logic. You know, I think, therefore I am.
Swamiji jokes about that, I am, therefore I think. he's so often used to joke around Descartes like that. Descartes was, you know, got it all backwards.
Falls in the woods and no one's there, does it still make a sound? And I guess after tonight you would say yes.
Yeah, Ishwara. Well, think of it yourself. You have a dream, there's nobody in the dream. There's just the dream. The wind blows a tree over and it crashes to the ground. Who hears it? Ishwara. You hear it.
That was really powerful tonight, actually, to have that image of a dream in this room. And no one there, no one being in the room, yet.
The room is known.
It's still there, yeah.
The room is known. That's Ishwara.